Fuck it, do it live.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
Fuck it, do it live. All right, friends, fans, followers, leaders, and true believers, I am here with...
Freddie Lockhart.
Freddie Lockhart, ladies and gentlemen, a good buddy of mine. He's also a military veteran dependent growing up and USO stand-up comedian, touring around the world, voiceover actor, and a lot of other cool stuff. Like, where were you born, man?
I was born in Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
And I lived there for the first 4 years, and then I lived at Edwards Air Force Base for another 4 years after that, which is here in the high desert, in the Mojave Desert.
So what was it like being a military dependent, like growing up? And
It's one of those things where it was my normal. So I grew up on especially Air Force bases and a lot of German shepherds around and a lot of airplanes. And it's something that you kind of take for granted. Dirty, no licking. It's something you take for granted when you're in it, but when you get out of it, you're like, oh, that was a different life.
That's actually just like being in the military.
In the military, right. Because yeah. Both of my parents were in it, so that's all I knew. And then when we lived in Edwards Air Force Base, which is where my mom worked at NASA as well, that was where I really, really just didn't take into appreciation that I had access to the space shuttle, and I knew astronauts, and my mom treated them, and I saw ex-jets turn into real jets, and it was just something. And until my parents got out of the military, I'm like, where's all the jets breaking the sound barrier? That I missed, right? That, you know, and I almost went deaf in my left ear from so many jets breaking the sound barrier every day.
Like at Edwards?
Yeah, at Edwards. That's where the dry lake bed is. And so people were always out there doing Mach 1 or more speed just to test the limits of speed. And so that was a constant. You'd be sitting in your house and you hear kaboom suddenly. And I remember that movie, The Right Stuff. I could relate to that because, yeah, your house just rattles and you're just so used to it.
They buzz the tower of your house.
Yeah, like, you hear boom like that. And it's cool if you're a kid too, looking up. And you know, I used to draw planes. It's like every kid I knew was obsessed with planes. So I saw fighter jets, B-2 bomber when it was a concept jet. I've seen men eject from jets.
That had to been pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen which I showed you on YouTube that time. They invited us out to watch them crash a commercial airliner.
Describe that, because so, that was fucking badass.
Yeah, we're there, and they went door to door saying, "Do you guys want?" I'll never forget it. No, Gertie, I'll never forget. They go, Gertie remembers.
Gertie's he doesn't. You can't forget.
Yeah, this was in 1985, Gertie. You weren't there. So they come to our house and they said, "Hey, would you guys like to watch us crash an airplane?" We're like, "Of course, we would like to watch you crash an airplane." And so they remotely rigged a DC-10, like a 727, and they flew it, and we brought food out and had picnics, and we all were lined up on the ridge out in the Edwards dried lake bed and just eating. And here comes I remember there was an announcer like, "Okay, here it comes," you know, and you just see this jet going like this, coming in and out and in and out, and they crash it into the ground, into like a resistance wall that they were trying to see what impact and fire would do. And the guy kind of messed it up and sort of crashed it sideways, but it exploded. The crowd cheered. We all were like, "This is
great." That was like pre-drones too.
Pre-drones. So this was a pretty sophisticated, like, it took a real good pilot to do this from somewhere at NASA. He was flying it remotely. But yeah, it's one of those things where I can barely remember what I had for lunch last Tuesday, but I can remember that day as clear as day because it was so cool. And it was just, they were always doing cool stuff like that out there. And so when my parents got out of the military, I'm like, I haven't seen a jet crash in, you know, years.
That, what's that? I haven't been in fire in how long? Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, exactly. It was eerily quiet and calm getting when my parents got out of the military. So that's what I can describe it as.
Do you remember what their jobs were in the Air Force?
My mom was a nurse and my dad was a surgical assistant. And so I believe they both entered as officers.
Okay, yeah.
Out of college. And so, yeah, my dad, they both worked in medical personnel. And then by the time I got to, I didn't know what they did until we lived in Edwards Air Force Base.
Right.
Like, I knew, like, I was only one to four living in Texas. You know, you're kind of dumb. So I'm just like, my parents do something.
Yeah.
I see my dad leaving the flight suit for some reason, because airmen wore flight suits. I didn't know if he was a pilot. I didn't know what he did.
Right.
And so I just knew that they left and came back. And the Air Force is not very, they call it the corporate military because you don't.
Right. Yeah.
You don't. I never saw my folks in uniform very much. Like that's another thing. Maybe a flight suit, or my mom would have her NASA gear on. She had a NASA flight suit, I believe, and then nurse scrubs. But it wasn't like when people find out, like, oh, I bet you had a real rough, you know, they think like I was raised by a Marine or something. I'm like, no, Air Force people don't come home yelling. Like, yeah. they're not yellers. You know, it just wasn't. It's back then. It was, and I think you were telling me this now. It was actually they have to do 8 years, but back then you could do like 2 to 4.
Well,
you know, something like, real light.
Right. Every contract is an 8 year. You just don't know that.
Know it until you're.
Yeah,
you're.
They can that's for enlisted. So every enlisted, so it might be like a 2 year or 4 year regular contract, right. But you have 6 years inactive ready reserve. So right. That's on the standoff to the side. But officers, you can resign your commission here and there and stuff like that. So they're on the other side of that.
It was always though, but the thing was, it was very militaristic, and I was always on a base. There was always men with guns everywhere. Scaring folks. No, there was always, you know, men with guns, and you would need ID to get in places, and I was always used to that.
Right.
I was always used to there being a guy with an AK or an assault there, just being anything jumps off, we've got this, because I've always lived in sensitive bases, too. Edwards is a very, you know, highly classified base, so I liked venturing off of the base. But when you live on a base, you're more into that land and those people than you are the outsiders.
Right. Oh, definitely. You know, because you're in a microcosm. You're in this
you shop at
this
your own
store.
This is a
small little store. You're in a small town on those bases. And it's funny, too, because like the bigger the bases, it feels like more of a smaller town. You know, and then I'm from a small military community, the Navy Seabees. And then for us, we're and it's like same with SEAL team guys. The team guys, they're in their own world and they're in bubbles between like the East Coast, West Coast, and then a couple other places around the world. And then for us, we have pretty much Gulfport, Mississippi, Port Hueneme, California. Those are our main places. Yeah. And then it's just but you're in this little bubble. And then it's just like 3 years from now, my kiddo is playing on recess with the same kiddo she played recess with in Virginia Beach that she was with in Port Hueneme, California.
Right. That's funny. Yeah, it is. It's a small world. It's like comedy. You're going to run into the people.
Oh, I love that.
You know, you're going to run into people that, you know, because that's how it was on my block. Kids were from Okinawa. Kids were from, everybody was from somewhere else, you know, and everybody lived somewhere else too. Which I always find that's what helps with living on bases and getting into comedy is you're just used to going to a different place and meeting different people.
How many places do you think you were growing up?
I was only in two stretches.
Right.
Lackland Air Force Base, which is I believe the main like Air Force hub. Like if you join the Air Force, you're going to Lackland. I believe.
No, it's definitely a big one.
It's almost like the Ramstein of the United States. It's that.
Kadena would be that of the Pacific. You know, that's in Okinawa and
so I lived there and my parents had a house. I think they bought a house. Back then you could buy a house when you were that young in the 70s, but they had a house off base, but we did everything on base. And then at Edwards, you had to live on base, like everybody. And because by then they'd had 2 children and we got priority housing.
Oh, yeah.
So we had a killer huge house that they didn't have to pay for. And so Christmases, I do remember, were really awesome because they had literally no overhead when they were in the military. Everything was paid for, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing, too, with Ventura and Port Hueneme, that area, people would rather live on base if they have kids and all that. Because you get a nice size house, a full-on garage, all that stuff, a nice yard to run around. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if you watch any of these TV Homes and Gardens type TV shows, like, look at this, it's a beautiful backyard. Mm-hmm. And all it is a concrete slab, you know, with a tetherball pole in the back somewhere.
Yeah, we were lucky at Edwards. We had a big, big backyard, big bedrooms, and I remember too the difference being when I got out, the lack of structure. I was very used to everything being neat, tidy, and structured.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of where I get a bit of my OCD-ness. Like, I prefer things to be neat, tidy, and structured.
Right. And then, like, I have to have this in by this time, and, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Not so much on the work ethic, but, no, but on the like, keeping your quarters clean and getting up at a certain time. And, like, you know, like, when you got out, like, somebody was always telling you when to get up, always telling you when to go to bed, always telling you when to eat.
Yeah, you just had a schedule, and, you know, and that's what's fucking with me right now with the COVID thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, the later on you go in your career, the more big boy rules that you have.
Right.
You know what I mean? So then it got weird because, like, now with this, it's just I'm used to, like, okay, I got to do Petey's place or I got to do whatever, and then I'm going to be at the store because we're recording a podcast at whatever time, and I got to be, you know, and then there's no time. It's
right.
just,
right.
I got to go to Freddie's house sometime this week. I want to record. He's my buddy.
Yeah.
We'll get there sometime, you know. Yeah, that's yeah. that's like, you know, and that's it's like when we get around to it, and that's kind of the weird part with this and the COVID thing and, mm-hmm. and that. But
so limiting.
Yeah, but when you're saying when you got away from the Air Force because the family got out and stuff, but while you were still in, I guess my another question too would be like, did that help you be a comic because you're trying to meet new friends in all these other places? And,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, it definitely helped me be comfortable. Like, I always say the most important thing about comedy, I always thought, was being comfortable in front of people you don't know.
Yes.
And so moving around a lot, being an Air Force brat, you learn to make friends quick, and you learn to, you know, learn to get along with people, and you learn how to be new,
yeah.
to stick out, how not to say the wrong things, you know. You learn how to just blend in, shut up, see how it goes, and then... So, because you ever meet a new guy who's just too comfortable, you know, like yeah. you get a new kid and he's like, "Hey, everybody, I'm so and so." It's like, whoa, you got to earn it, buddy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you got to earn it. And hey, so,
come on, let's do the slumber party at my house.
Yeah.
My mom's got all the Capri Suns. Let's
soon,
go.
Too soon. And he's like that Doug Porter kid on this on Wonder Years. So it's like you can't buy your way, and you gotta earn it. And so I think there was a lot of things like that learned, but it also made me realize, okay, I must be funny because wherever I go, people laugh.
Right. And you know? Yeah, I think that helps a lot. I bounced around. I wasn't like a military kid, but with divorced parents and all that, and being, you know, this is a different school every year, and that's where I kind of related to a lot of the military kids, you know. And I think when they come over, it's like, oh, that's the cool dad, because that same thing. It's just like you're just trying to find a good place to fit, you know, get in
yeah,
where you fit
just
in.
Get in and just meet some people and have a crew, you know, or a brotherhood or with some dudes, you know, wherever, whether it's comedy or
yeah.
military guys. And I see that. And when my parents got out, I was actually glad to settle in a place. That's when we moved to Arizona, and I was glad to settle in a place.
Right.
Too, because it was like, but they also got divorced, so then we moved around a lot within the state, you know.
Okay.
So it was I totally got it. And by middle school, I was able to stay, you know, go to the same middle school and go to the same high school. And by then, you know, so when people say where are you from, I'll say Arizona. Where were you born? Texas.
Yeah.
Where do you live? California. And where is home? California. You know,
you
back home is Arizona. That's since I grew my formative years there, you know. That's what I consider home, as it were.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The closest thing to it.
Yeah. Now, how'd you get into, like, going up, starting doing stand-up then?
I knew I was going to do comedy even when I was in high school. So then I told my parents I want to do it and move out here. And they're like, all right. And they said, you know, try to get some college. So I went to Mesa Community College and... try to get a real estate license, but I never finished. And I was 17 at the time, and
right.
so I was like, this is lame. So I told my parents I want to move out, and moved out to Newport Beach, because on a map it was like that far from Los Angeles, like 3 inches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I can hack it. You know, I can do that commute.
Sure.
Not realizing that, what does that equate to? About two and a half hours?
3 inches, yeah. 1 inch is an hour, right. You know, per scale. That's the... That's
so
the
thought,
new scale on maps. 1 inch equals 1 hour.
I thought I could live in Newport Beach with my buddies who had moved there and do stand up in L.A. And I quickly found out that was not feasible, not in an 85 Honda Civic.
Yeah.
So stayed there for 6 months and then went back to Arizona, worked at Motorola, saved up money, and then came back here on May 25th, 2000. and then walked to the Comedy Store because I knew all about it. And I didn't walk there. I parked my car. I found a parking space on Sunset. I thought all this stuff was being like, the world's working for me, man. Like, yeah. There's a parking space. Got a ticket. I go, because I didn't realize it was like loading, like one of those newbie out of town things.
Right.
All that literature you got to read, and I didn't read it all. So I park in front of the Comedy Store, go in, and I'm like, yeah, I want to see somebody about getting a job. And lo and behold, this guy, Rob, I can't remember his last name, but he was the manager at the time. He's like, yeah, we're looking for people. And I'm like, serendipity, man. This is really, the world is really working to make this happen. Turns out Mitzi had fired like the whole staff that day and they needed a whole new one anyway. And I had walked into like, I was like the guy in Unforgiven who walked in after William Money shot everybody. Like, what happened here? You know, like this is okay. And so I got a job right away and thought for sure, this is amazing. I got the only shift available, Sunday morning phone shift on the, take that back, Saturday morning phone shift. From 9 a.m., which, God, I don't know why somebody had to be at Economy Club at 9 a.m., till 9 p.m. And then this guy, Kenny Tinney, would come relieve me. And Kenny Tinney was Mitzi's pool guy and a champion arm wrestler.
Okay.
Nice guy.
Could hang up a phone very fast.
Yeah, and real, I don't want to say, real eccentric. He was real, I think he might have been on the spectrum a bit. He was a real interesting dude. And so he was my first introduction to it. And he goes, I go up, I do comedy. And then I find out everybody in the building goes up. The accountant, Bob, goes up. Everybody goes up. They're like, when are you going to go up? When are you going to go up? You got to go up. And then I start getting scared. I'm like, I've never gone up. I'm only, you know, I'm only 20. I just got here. And then Duncan was the talent coordinator.
Duncan Trussell?
Like, yeah. He's like, you're going up tonight. I was like, oh. And so I remember like, okay. And so Bobby Lee was hosting. And it was the open mic night, the Sunday night. And it was there was a section allotted for employees to go up.
Right.
And I went up. And it was kind of a blur, but I did really good. And I was like, oh, my God. I got this. I can do this. This is great. The next 100 times I eat disastrous shit.
Yeah.
And it was just that not knowing what you're doing. So I always say your first set is closest to your veteran set because you don't know what you're doing. You're not trying to do anything. You know?
Yeah.
You're just being honest because you are scared and you're being honest. You know?
You're just open. You're just letting the world take you by its reins for a second there.
And so it's like,
hell yeah.
It was like, or it's like riding a bike, like that first time I thought I had it. I was like, look at me go, look at me. And I went over the
fucking
handlebars.
Fucking bushes, man.
And it did. I really bombed like viciously, like the next 100 or so times because I thought I had it. But then I started to realize it was just about repetition and getting comfortable in front of people.
Yeah, people don't realize how many times you got to work out sometimes just for shit.
It's
like skateboarding, man. And it's just like, let's see like an amazing skater. And I'm like, this guy's fucking awesome. But you didn't realize how many times he fell on his ass for that pop shove at the fucking land.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, then that's just like
eating
comedy.
Shit out,
man.
In front of
Ralph's.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah.
Knees are fucking just bloodied, all that other shit.
Yeah. And it was just a matter of getting up. And so, that's how I did it. Luckily, the Comedy Store took me in and I was able to not just work there and make money, but do shows all the time. Like, there was always shows going on within the store. So it was really, it was like going to comedy college, if there is such a thing. And especially back then, because the old farm system still existed. If you're funny, your name will be on the marquee.
Yeah. So this is like 2000?
Yeah,
then?
2000. Okay. This was 2000. So I got made a paid regular in 2003. So it took 3 years to get Mitzi to pass me. But that's going from having never done it to making money doing it. And so I was pretty excited about that. And then the bummer is when you get passed as a paid regular, you lose your job as an employee. So they can make room for the next guy to come in. Like the farm system, the thing worked really well back then. The Comedy Store thrives now financially, but back then you could literally be absolutely nobody and the Comedy Store could turn you into somebody.
Right. Well, and that's the thing too, is just like how Duncan just pushed you up. A lot of times I think comedy and a lot of other things. And I felt this way when I figured out how to marry being a military instructor with being a stand-up comic. It's just go up and do your fucking job.
Right.
And, you know, and then having that confidence really helped a lot. And a lot of times too, you take a billet, a job in the military, army, navy, whatever, as an instructor, You know, the first time like Gunnery Sergeant Hartman went in there, he was probably scared shitless to tell these people, to suck it up through their asshole with buttermilk. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's it. And it's like comedy when you get into that whole thing. It's like, dude, you got to go up.
Yeah, you got to. And then you got to get, it's just those nerves. And I tell comedians, it never goes away. Like, I never don't not feel something before I go on stage. It's not like, oh my God. Now right. It's just like, oh, okay, let me get my mind right. Here we go. And that's just because you're not a sociopath, you know? Like, if you didn't have feelings,
yeah.
Because it's your fight or flight instinct. It's your body saying, I'm not going to let you burp, fart, forget what you're doing. Anything like that while you're up here, I'm gonna get you focused and
say twice.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, and so many people don't realize that adrenaline and butterflies, those are good things to let you know to stay focused. You know, these are things to say, hey, you're alive, this is the task at hand. Nobody's ever had to go, oh my God, my stomach hurts while I'm on stage. I've never had to take a dump while on stage. I've had to take one before.
Yeah.
And I've had to take one after, but it's never been like, oh, you know, where diarrhea just suddenly hits while you're on stage, because your body's like, no, we've got this task at hand. And so I think once I learned to embrace the fear and love it, I got to a point now where, like, with all of us off right now, where I feel weird not doing it.
That's, yeah, totally. It's
almost like anxious not doing it. You know, it's weird. It's
when
weird.
When was the last time you went up, you think?
Probably the improv, and probably sometime in March. It'd have to be right before the shit hit the fan. I was regularly doing this friend Jody Miller's show there, and I can't, and maybe the store that same week. But and then I'm scheduled to do one Jamar's show. I was going to do the last one, but ended up getting a stomachache, and then before getting on stage.
Yeah.
Not while on stage, but so that show went pretty good. So he's doing another one September 6th that I'm going to go do. And what is that? 6 months now?
Damn near.
April, May,
yeah,
June,
March.
July, August. Yeah, it's going to be 6 months now. So this, and before that, the longest I'd ever gone in my career was 2 weeks. The longest ever without going on stage.
Now back up to the Jamar thing. This is crazy. He's doing a punk rock. He does this punk rock type show in his house.
Yeah.
Just like,
Jamar's very punk rock.
He is.
Everything about him is punk rock.
Dude.
Not paying his tags for 2 years.
That's
very punk rock.
That's a great fucking funny story there, too.
Yeah. Poor guy. Luckily, I say one thing. He's super funny and super likable.
Yeah.
You know, because we were able to help Jamar get out of a jam that not too many people would be able to get out of, I would say, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, at least and Jamar was funny too, because he was like, man, cops took my car, but I didn't pay my shit. So, like, he's just so matter of fact about the whole thing. So, but he got his car back through our good friend, who was able to help that happen. We won't name too many names because we don't want to get him in trouble at work. But
I just love the part where he said what he did when he showed up.
Oh yeah, when he got his car back, the dancing, when he was dancing
on his car.
That was the best. That was peak Jamar. I was like, yep, that's Jamar. And they must have been looking out the window too, like, what did we just do? We're giving a guy his car back and he's dancing on it. They're like, he's grateful, is what he is. He's super grateful.
Yeah, I'm wondering when he went in, he had the
mohawk.
Has that mohawk he puts on.
Yeah,
it's fucking great.
That's so
hilarious. A lot of people think it's like legit.
It's real. Yeah,
it's just like, you know.
No, and it looks like he's got like a Mr. T look. Like, he's the silliest guy I've ever met, and he's straight out of Compton.
Yes.
I love that. I just love that he doesn't put on this hard. And by the way, he can fight. I've seen him kick some ass before.
I can totally imagine.
Yeah,
somebody with
box.
That kind of energy.
Yeah, he's a good boxer.
He's not going to go down easy at all.
Somebody tried messing with him one time, and it was the wrong dude, and he dropped. Just pop, pop, pop. Like, they would have been on the thing we watch. What hood is this? What hood is this? Oh, that's my favorite show on Instagram now. God, those guys are great.
Man, I honestly like that better than World Star, because you get some great narration.
Yeah,
and it's like,
and no screaming, annoying. And they're funny. Those guys are hilarious. It took me like 5 videos to realize they were rhyming even. I was laughing alone. I was like, oh my God, these are rhymes. Like, this is just poetry.
Doing one bar, and it's just back and forth.
Yeah.
And it leaves off right on top of the other one, so there's no gap.
And you can see the development, too. I watched all the way down to the very first one. Their first one, they were kind of like just talking about it.
Well, but do that.
Now they're like Abbott and Costello, like the way they play off of each other. And I guess we should explain what we're talking about.
All right.
Crime Faces. is it called?
I don't remember. What is that?
I think it's called Crime Faces out of New York City. And if you're like us, you like to watch fight videos. It's a sickness, I know. But you feel less guilty watching this fight videos because these guys are super funny. They're very New York. They narrate every fight. And so, like, a guy will be get knocked out. And what do they go? Banzai! Every time a dude gets knocked out. And then, like, they'll be like, his legs is linguine. He can't feel me. He doesn't know the deal, B. Like, they say these really funny rhymes while the dude is falling. And so, one, you don't feel so guilty about watching such gratuitous violence. And two, you have a good laugh while you're watching the violence.
It's like, yeah. And then I think most staff is sitting there with them like, hey, man, say this. Because it is well written.
So well written. Yeah. Like, these guys are, it's like they're calling the fight with these super funny raps. Now, I don't even want to call them raps. They're more like poetry. They're more like poems that go along with the action. And the fights are hilarious. And so they open it up with, what hood is this?
And then you actually see, like, and some of the descriptions on the bottom are fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They always have a funny thing. And it's all over the world, too. Brazil, you know, whether it's Oklahoma, but they got something to say about everyone. And so they'll be like, you're watching too many World Star videos, didn't know about the leg strike. You know, he really.
Yes.
You can tell these guys pay attention to all forms of fighting.
These guys are like patrons of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. They know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, like that dude in Brazil when they go, everybody in Brazil can throw down. Grandma can toss you a beating. It's the home of
Gracie.
Was
that the cholo in the parking garage?
No, this was the guy at the hotel in Brazil, and the guy tried to like throw a stick on him, and then he came back. And he goes, you don't want to mess with the Brazilian. You know, he gives him a Brazilian wax, and then he just starts dropping him. And that, yeah, he said something like, even grandma's got hands in Brazil. You don't want to mess around.
So if you guys get a chance, take a pause real quick. No, I'm just kidding. If you're live,
stop watching us.
Hang here, but go back and watch that. And, whoa.
Jesus.
I didn't do it.
Sorry.
Sorry. My bad. Oh, man. Do you see anything blow up?
Nah, it's my chair gets caught under the desk sometimes.
Oh, no. Like with the Air Force people. Did you watch anything blow up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen, planes and then things eject. They didn't really work with a lot of ordnance or things like that, obviously, there.
Right.
Because, the Edwards is more of a speed place. Like, how fast can you make this thing go?
Gotcha.
And so I didn't get to ever see anything blow up or any, like, probably exercises you would even see if you went to, like, 49 or 29 Palms or something like that. Like, you could probably see some cool shit there. But, no, I never saw anything blow up other than just planes, you know?
Did you bring any of that stuff? Oh, you did the USO tour. So, like, when you were – did you ever see anything blow up on your – did you, like – where did you go with the USO tours? I guess I should probably ask
I went to – I did a European tour of all the bases there. And I didn't realize how many bases we had. But I went from Ramstein in Germany to a few bases in Germany. Trying to remember their names because there were so many cool ones. But one, I was shocked how many bases we had there. And then throughout – so probably maybe about five Air Force bases – in Germany, and then one of them is not just an Air Force base, Ramstein. It's a huge, huge military depot, and right out the window you see C-130s, you see, you know, Hueys, you see every form of military aviation out there. So I was just geeking out. The only thing was you weren't allowed to take pictures, but I was just like, my window was a view of the airfield, and I was just like, I'd see a C-130 come in, a bunch of weary soldiers get off, and just like watching all this, and it was just like, you know, just a military kid's boner. So
hell yeah. But year was this roughly?
This was 2013.
Okay, so 20. Yeah.
So like, yeah, it was. It was. That's where it started. Was at Ramstein, and they put us up nice, and we did a big show, and it was all for Air Force airmen. And actually, the one at Ramstein, there was a lot of Navy there. There was a lot of Air Force, Marines, Navy SEALs. So it was really, really cool, and went to several bases after that. I can't remember their names off the top of my head, but Ramstein was like the must-see one, you know. And then we went to a bunch in England, and then I think in Brussels, in Belgium, and then also in France. But I was really interested in a lot of the ones where the world, you know, where the world was fought,
right?
So in German and English countryside and French. So what was really cool is the American the locals would pair you with a local and they'd take you all over the place.
That's really cool.
You know, yeah.
So how old were you think about that time?
Was I?
Yeah.
About 35.
35. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was really fun and yeah. So like. The guy, you know, in the Armed Forces tour would take. They were so excited to have us entertain for them, and they were so cool and gracious, yeah. And really put us. Honestly, they put us up better than any like club owner or anything ever. They were so gracious to have us.
And the cool thing at being 35 versus being 20, 21, 22 mm-hmm. is you. And I found this touring not just as a comic, but in the military, is that when I was 20s. Also, I wanted to just get fucked up.
Oh, you know right. what I mean?
And
yeah.
that's it. But like,
yeah.
And then when you can actually
enjoy the time.
And then appreciate
yeah.
like where you're at. Cause like, now I'm like, fuck, I want to go see like Normandy and
yeah.
stuff like this.
Yeah.
And the 96, 97 deployment, I was, you know, I was 19, 20 years old on my
right.
first deployment. And all I did was I could tell you the inside of the Crow's Nest, which was the bar on base,
mm-hmm.
and then like Fujiyama's and everything outside Gate 2,
yeah.
and how I got out. I couldn't tell you how I got home.
That's
you
know? Funny.
And
yeah.
that's my first deployment. My last deployment was quite the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, we had a group of us, and we bounced all over Okinawa, Japan to check things out, man. So that had to have been pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something, and that's what I would love to do is go see Japan the next time. Like I went to the European one this time. Because the Middle East one, I had friends going. A lot of them were like, "It's pretty dangerous." Like it's yes, you go forward operating base to forward operating base with the you know guys like you who would be protecting people, but you know mortar round ain't got no name on it. So it's like it it was more for I would love to go have gotten into this shit as it were, but my mom
right.
was like, "Can you not go to the Middle East if you don't have to?"
Yeah,
and so and I was like, you know, I would like to go. My at the time I didn't have any nieces or nephew, but they're German. My nieces and nephew are, and it was cool to see Germany. It was cool to see France, and I they did a trip when I was in high school, but I didn't go for the same reason. I was just a punk then.
Right.
But at 35, I was lights out at 9 p.m. and let's go see the sights in the morning. So
yeah,
yeah, it was really really fun, and I really was. It was just awesome how appreciative the airmen and the troops and everybody were to have us. They were. It was like. Here they are stationed out in the middle of nowhere, and they're thanking us profusely. I'm like, dude,
that's
thank you, man.
Totally like, how I got into it. It was like Louis Black, Lance Armstrong, Kid Rock, Miss America, and that, and it was all put together by Robin Williams. And then he did that USO tour, and then these guys are sick of hearing the story. But that, and then he came through Kuwait, and then it just made my mind, like, took my mind off of everything.
Because
you're really thinking about a million things. It's like the Matrix running around in the background.
Right.
You're like, what gun truck's up? Who needs comms? Who needs Fed? Who's going through a divorce? Whose kids learn how to walk? Whose mind is not in the game, basically? And then you got all those thoughts going on, and finally those go away.
Right.
And then it's just this comedy, you know? And then when
you get to cut loose.
Yeah, when you or any of these other cats go to these places, they take the time. Because it's not this, you did a 15-minute spot or a 20-minute spot or a fucking hour spot, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, you took time because it's not fucking easy just to get from here to Rota, Spain
right.
or wherever you go.
Right.
It's, you know, that's some shit. You got to, you know.
Yeah, no, it was great. And they were all so appreciative and they wanted to take you places afterwards. But I was like, I ain't going with any of you crazy bastards because those guys could party. And so I just met a lot of cool dudes and a lot of young men too, just very, very young dudes who, and women too, who were, it's like, you know, I was 35 by then, but when I was their age, there was really no conflict. September 11th hadn't happened
right.
yet. Like I was, you know, life was, I don't want to say happy-go-lucky and different, but it was a different, my generation hadn't really seen any action before that,
yeah,
you know, until this new generation came along, and every last one of them had.
Yeah, people that are enlisting right now don't know a world without war.
Exactly.
Which is so foreign to me, because we're the same age, roughly.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, because when we were kids, man, the war was a Topps baseball card. Like, ooh, I got no Storm in Norman.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, ooh, yeah. But
yeah.
It's a Topps baseball card commercial. And
right.
That was it. You know,
yeah.
They sold Pepsis, and, you know, and you didn't realize how much shit really went into that.
because we didn't see that. We just saw tanks going around and then G.I. Joe promoting and fucking Schwarzkopf's on TV with some cool stars.
Storming Norman and Schwarzkopf.
Stretching them buttons on his fucking uniform.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
No, they market it. America's one thing they've been really good at. It's not a diss or a compliment, but they, our ability to market war is really good. We're such good propagandists.
Yeah.
In that it was always like... okay, well, let's get the ad campaign going. They work with Madison Avenue on how to properly sell this war. Like, what kind of war do we
PR,
have?
Man. Yeah. Everything's PR.
And so we've always been really
good. They're not
good
French fries, they're fucking freedom fries.
Yeah, yeah, get it in their heads. Get them angry.
France isn't with us. Fuck them.
Get them angry about it. Let me shut this before the dogs start carrying on. But yeah, I had such a good time doing those tours, and to the point where I liked it so much I wanted to go again. Something happened where I think they organized a new one and were able to go somewhere in Greece or something like that, and I wasn't that interested in that. But when it goes to say Japan or China, I would really love to go to
it's
that
probably
part
like
of the world.
Sudabe Creek, because that's like there's a pretty nice sized base there.
Yeah,
and the Seabees are there like all the time. Some of my old guys are there.
Yeah,
like right now, if this COVID shit wasn't happening, I got Okinawa, Guam, and Rota, Spain are three places that we could probably hit. I just needed to figure out how to get there. You know what I mean?
That was gosh. If the world opens back up again, going to Santa Monica is a treat.
Yeah.
Anymore, and like you, to think about using my passport, I don't even know where it is right now.
Yeah, right. Especially like just even leaving the state sometimes. Cause some of the states you need to be quarantined. Like, yeah. So you go to Massachusetts, you need to have like a fucking 72-hour. A negative test that's less than 72 hours old.
Yeah, they'd be like, let's see your test, guy. Come on, guy. Let's see your test, guy. Let's see your COVID results, guy. Yeah, I can't. We live in California, so Californians don't. You never hear a Californian go, I need a vacation.
No.
You know, we live in paradise.
What cracks me up, though, is people that bitch about this place that live in Nebraska or something. Like, oh, that's because you live in a lame-ass state.
I know.
And I got into it on Facebook. Not with an argument. It was just a friend of mine. You know, went back and forth. And he's just like, we have the CWS. And I'm like, what's that? Cold winter snow? No, the College World Series. Like, they have a fucking World Series? Never knew that. Okay.
Yeah, like, that's... No, it's really funny, too, when people, they have these outside opinions about California. I had said something about California and posted it. I don't get on Facebook, but my tweets go to Facebook.
Right.
And so somebody, and half the shit I'm saying, I'm just bullshitting. I'm just like, oh, here's a thought. I'll tweet it.
Yeah.
But somebody, like, will get about like that with California, that because that state sucks. It's why people are moving out in droves. I'm like, okay, it's not a right to live here. You know, it's like, okay,
it's expensive. That's for sure.
How many people are like, we're saving up our money to go visit Nebraska? How our family's going to go vacation in sunny Cleveland this year? No offense to Ohio.
That's all
but
right.
It's
none
like,
taken.
Get the fuck out. You go to California, you go to Hawaii. That's where you go. And maybe you don't like, you know, I always say, number one, the taxes are too high. So I get why people are moving out of there.
Right.
And then number two, the homeless population, if you're homeless, what's the most ideal climate you could possibly think of in the contiguous U.S.?
Especially when your insurance runs out at the mental institution and they're like, all right, we get a bus ticket. Where do you want to go? And that's unfortunate that happens, but that's exactly what happens.
Do you want to go to Wyoming? No.
Well, it's going to be snowing in
Denver. You
want
to go to Texas?
3 months, so.
No. How about this? It's 75 degrees year-round. How about Los Angeles? Yeah.
And you're sometimes gonna be like, I wish I was homeless too, because they get awesome tents.
Yeah, they get.
Have
really
you seen some of these tents?
Yeah, really
these
cool.
Tent cities around LA.
Yeah.
Holy shit!
I saw a 2-story one. I was actually really impressed. I was like, I didn't even know this was a thing. This guy had a chimney. Like what's like you're
what's your Wi-Fi password, motherfucker?
I know. You know? Like, I'm stealing Wi-Fi off him now. Like, but yeah, it's. I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day who's thinking about fleeing California, and I'm like, all right, you know, wherever New York, expensive, California, expensive. Nobody comes here because it's cheap. That's all I'm saying. Nobody's ever like, oh, I can't believe it. It's expensive here. That's it.
What the one thing I thought was neat too with Atlanta, Georgia for a while because it was cheap.
Yeah.
A lot of people like it was like a big hipster movement. Yeah. Everybody's like, we're going to go to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to pay shit and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow, it's humid as fuck. But
yeah.
It's cold for that. It's still pretty, but no.
It's still the South and still you're still going to get that sweltering heat. Good. And then, you know, up in San Francisco, they can't afford shit anymore. I'm like,
no, that's pimping, pushing everybody out like a pimple.
So they got them out, and then Oakland, nobody can afford. And that's usually pretty much thanks to Silicon Valley because they just, boom, you can't afford to live within miles of here in the Palo Alto Valley or anywhere like that. So it's sad, but it's even if it prices me out, I won't go being like, fuck you, California.
Right.
Motherfucker.
Well, the thing is, just like anything else, it's the squeakiest wheel.
Yeah.
It's getting greased. So like everybody when they see California, they have this representation that everybody is, and I'm not making this political at all. I'm just saying that it makes everybody look like a far leftist person.
Oh yeah, they get
and
this
I
idea.
See all these memes like if California was a person, this is the person.
Right.
And it's usually not a very pleasant person to be.
Right.
You know, I'm like,
and there's 30 million people living here and it's like there's a variation like you would not believe. Probably the highest concentration of those white power people live here.
Oh, in the north,
In the Inland Valley and up north, or the Inland Empire, then up north. Yeah, like there's no shortage of red in this state. But yeah, you know, L.A. and San Francisco give it the reputation that it has. And the funny thing is, San Francisco hates L.A. They look at us like dummies who don't read.
It's so funny,
you know? Yeah. And so I think San
Francisco
Diego's great.
Just all encompassing. They're like, just come hang.
Just come. I know. Come nobody hang. Nobody ever bitches about San Diego.
San Diego's the nicest city.
You never
in the
meet a dick
world.
From San Diego.
No.
Yeah, he's cool, man. San Diego. Yeah.
Oh no, it's just usually it's like Ryan Tomo. Hey, I want to do. I got you, buddy.
Yeah.
You want to do my show? Come on.
It's almost like Midwesterners who live at the beach. You know.
That's you know what that does not fucking surprise me, because that's like the biggest West Coast base, right?
Right.
You know, so you have all the Marines and all the fucking Navy that live down there. That their children or grandchildren from Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, blah, blah, blah. That's where they're at, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's some nice goddamn people down there. I always loved playing San Diego. Always loved it.
The La Jolla Comedy Store, man.
Yeah.
That whole area is super cool.
Yeah. I always enjoyed it. I always take Nicole with me when I'd go play down there because that was like a vacation within a vacation.
My buddy, Derek Patterson, he was like, battalion like me, I was in Ventura, California, which I always thought was beautiful. I still do, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Ventura, I always thought was beautiful. I thought it was awesome, and I spent a majority of my career there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, oh no, dude, this place sucks, bro. Like, oh, because he owned a house in San Diego, you know, and he worked with the SEAL teams down there. He was like not dev group, but fucking logistics support unit. So like whenever. I got a dumb bit about it, but it's SEALs are the rock stars. We're the roadie. And that's exactly how it works. So wherever SEALs go, we build their camps and their infrastructure and all that other shit. And that's where my dude, he bought a house down there, but he had to leave. Your time's up. You got to go somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
So he kept his family down there. He liked the schools and shit. So when he went up to Ventura, and then he's like, yeah, dude, nah, fuck this place, man. It fucking sucks, man. Every time I come up to Ventura, there's like this black cloud above it. And I'm like, that's horrible. This place is awesome. I just left Virginia Beach. No disrespect to Virginia Beach, but Virginia Beach or Ventura, California, tell me which one's not humid.
Yeah.
And it's always the same nice weather. And so then the first time I go down, I did the La Jolla Comedy Store. Mike Vinn hooked me up with a spot there. Yeah. And I did some other mics. And I did a VFW like smack, 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 which is so cool. And it was just so fast. I did my thing, just, you know, work mode, how a comic is, you don't really think about where you're at.
Right.
You just work mode. And then I stayed with Derek for a couple days, and I stayed with my buddy Will Stimson for a couple days. He's also Navy. And I'm like, this is the most beautiful fucking place.
Yeah.
And I'm kicking myself in the ass because I did 20 years and I never did one tour in San Diego.
Oh, gosh.
So what I'm trying to say is it's the nicest fucking city in the world.
Yeah, it's beautiful down there. It's damn paradise, and people are just nice. It's funny when we would go from L.A. down there in San Diego, and like we honk our horns a lot here in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, but like people don't do that there. It's just like, whoa. They're like,
come
sorry.
On, buddy. Yeah, it's cool,
like,
man.
All right. We don't need to. All right.
No, you're just trying to get on the eight. It's all good, dude. Crazy eights. It's all right, bro.
It's that beach life, too. People are just chiller near beaches. You know?
Yeah. Everybody should just act like Don Carlos's taco shop.
It's yeah,
like right down your street.
Shout out Don Carlos. Shout out to Ryan. I would eat there. I told him the other day, send me a burrito, man. I miss that dude. Yeah, he's a great supporter, man. He loved what we did. And you mentioned Mike Venn, super cool guy. I love Mike. And
Marine.
Marine. And so, yeah, they used to play. I used to headline there once a month back in the day, and haven't been down there in a long time, and obviously because of COVID. But then they just started booking really big acts too.
So, well, that was when the whole wave and that's like Ron Ripley, a buddy of mine who's a door guy down there. And it's just like, did his military podcast, which is really cool, I'm trying to think of what it was. Something discharge. Honorable discharge. That's it. There.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his podcast was really cool. But what was I saying? Yeah, the whole San Diego scene. Just, everybody's super fucking cool. And then I just want to shout out to Mr. Ripley himself.
Yeah, but, it's definitely cool down there. And the staff, the La Jolla Comedy Store, just awesome. The best staff in the world.
That's the thing, too. It's like when the store here started doing so good, they started satelliting everybody out down there,
right?
And then, like, man, I went through like a bad fucking, I won't say a bad divorce, it was just a bad time in my life, you know what I mean? Because
there's no good divorce,
And then I text Steve Simone. It's like, hey man, I gotta come out. And he's like, I get a text back, hey buddy, fucking come down, we'll do La Jolla Comedy Store, and then we'll stay at the condo, we'll get pizzas, we'll get burritos, we'll hang out, we'll talk to Don Carlos, we'll get like a Trevino burrito, like this whole like thing.
Oh yeah, I remember the Trevino burrito. Go away, my dog.
By the way, the dog is at the door.
Yeah, the dog is at the door, angry that we shut the inside door.
You sons of bitches. All right, you're doing voiceover shit now. Like, how does that work? How's magnets work?
I got into voiceover stuff when probably I used to be on a TV show where I did a lot of impressions and stuff, so I could get work from that. And so, yeah, I got sent one that I got to do today. That it's Barack Obama, and I'll probably get it.
Hell yeah.
Unless Barack Obama himself turns it in, and he's like, "Meet you."
That would suck. I mean, he is kind of looking for a job. He's been out of work for about 3 years.
He is, and so what's really cool about now too, especially the voiceover world. It used to be they'd give me a voiceover audition, and I have to go to Santa Monica and read an engineer, and then the engineer would give you notes and say, "Try it this way, that way." But once you do it for a while, basically they want three takes. Do it each way.
Right.
This one I was lucky enough that they gave me specific notes on how they want to hear it. But yeah, it's fun. I did one. Kevin Hart had one last year that I did, a Fox pilot. They never did anything with it. Chris Rock was in it, and Tracy Morgan, and I was in it. And it's just, I've never done one of these and not had fun.
Yeah.
Because there's no on-camera pressure. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't have to get into makeup. You don't have to memorize your lines. And so you can try things and try different things out. Mm-hmm. And so it's something I've always liked doing and been lucky enough to get small jobs and big projects. So like I was telling you earlier, I'd like to get a big job on a big project so I can just do all my work from right here.
That'd be cool. That's how like so many people, I don't know if people like Dr. Drew or Ben Shapiro or whoever, I don't care if you like them or dislike them, folks. Mm. I'm just saying they have studio at home and they just do everything right at that's
Have you heard of Joe Rogan?
Oh, I heard about that guy.
Yeah. He dabbles, and I guess he's got a little podcast.
What?
And, yeah, a little tiny studio.
Does he do it out of his house?
Yeah, out of his house.
Crazy guy.
It's a stay-at-home comic. That's my ultimate dream. You know what I mean?
Like, he wants to be a stay-at-home dad. I want to be a stay-at-home comic.
Yeah, so it's almost like, this. I can't see when the world's going to go back to normal, so this might be a semi-new normal or at least a version of it. So
yeah.
I'm gonna give it a try. I always was... You know, I don't mind doing auditions and things like that from home, but I've been more into doing the podcast and at least something like you, me, and Nako do or something like that.
Yeah.
Not so many other people are doing. Like, I don't like to do one just to do one.
Right.
Like, so many people will do it almost obligatory. Like, oh, I got to have a podcast. Here's my podcast.
Fully.
You know, what do you talk about? Nothing. You know, it's like, well, you're not Seinfeld. You can't get away with that.
that's totally true. That's like when I first started doing it, mm-hmm. I couldn't tour. So I was like, I'm just going to do a podcast. I called it Josh O's Radio Show. Yeah. And I just talked to people I thought were interesting. So I had hockey enforcers on. But realistically, I'm talking just to people I like. You know what I mean?
But
and
that's the smartest way instead
promote
of
promote this. Yeah. Thing.
It's the smartest way. Like I was every in my podcast before, I always made a point to talk to different people of different yeah. walks of life, because so many people will talk to the same comedians doing the same things, talking about the same stories and the same people. So I got the biggest receptions when I would have like a normal person from the normal world on a podcast.
Yeah,
you know?
that's the best, and that's what this started out as. This one started out with, I just want to talk to vets, like what you did while you're in, what you do now when you got out, mm-hmm. that transition from military life to civilian life, and then also people I'm grateful for, like you, Lewis Black, Jimmy Schubert, like people that were comics that came mm-hmm. on the show, mm-hmm. and it's like you're a USO comic, but you were actually had mm-hmm. a childhood in this so yeah. it's just like what I like is the different perspectives from every angle yeah. of the military lifestyle,
right?
You know, and which it's cool because you can tell that going from one place to another place helped develop you as you are,
yeah,
you know, and you're a lot. I'm more appreciative of veterans and people than most people, obviously, because that's your family.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? You have like some other people are doing some pretty badass. I don't know if you want to talk about that right now, but you have some people doing some badass shit in your family right now that yeah. are on active duty.
Oh, that's- yeah. Yeah. My cousin Brian is a colonel in the Army. He was a Ranger, Delta Force, Green Beret, everything you can possibly be. Dude. He was.
Yeah.
And most nice, humble, unassuming guy. That's usually the ones who are the killers.
Dude.
But he speaks like seven languages, learns the language to wherever he deploys. I think he's currently, I don't know if he's back in America right now. He was in Afghanistan, and then he was in Kathmandu for like 4 years, like all these different weird places. But he learned all the languages. He's just, you know, super cool, super smart, probably the smartest guy I know, like taught me how to look at the world when I was in my early 20s. Not told me how, but was like, here's some things
yeah,
that will
yeah.
never let you down. If you subscribe to this publication, if you look at things this way, you know, it was just, he was such a, I'm like, if this guy who knows so much about the world thinks this way, so sometimes people help guide or shape
that's awesome.
Your worldview. And he really did a lot. And he's from a small town in West Virginia and he's lived everywhere. And yeah, hopefully he gets the Congress to make him a general. That'd so I can cool. say I'm related to a general, you know?
A flag officer.
Yeah.
He's got a flag, dude. He's yeah. got a flag. Like, hell yeah.
That would be crazy because I've seen him climb through his career. I remember he was in the first Gulf War. I remember talking to him in the first Gulf War. He was an engineer in a seven-man okay. unit to go around basically finding bombs and destroying them. And so he was already special ops by the first Gulf War.
Right, right.
So he must have
EOD shit.
He must have gone... He enters an officer after WVU. I don't know if it does it go Green Beret then Ranger?
No, they're different, totally different.
But they're within the Army.
But yeah, they're both Army.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so, just like not necessarily you're not.
He must have gone to Rangers first.
Right.
And then Green Beret, because by the time the second war came, the second Gulf War that we're currently in, he was already a attaché to the president or something like that, like had really, really just climbed up. And some guys are like, that's like policing. Some guys just want to do it, and other yeah. guys want to climb. Some are career men, you know.
Right. Totally.
And Brian was always a career man, and but loved it. Like he does those what do you call the Iron Man challenges? Like this yeah. guy's constantly pushing himself. Like he's so opposite of me. I can't believe our mothers are sisters. You know, like it's great.
Yeah. Oh man, I miss that shit. Like the part of the military I totally miss is just like I was a crew man, but at the same time it was like I stunted my career. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I did some shit and I'm like, well, you know, I'd love to make it. I'd love to keep going. I might not make chief, but I'll make a lot of them. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
It's like I always looked at Lemmy from Motorhead.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lemmy is my hero. He's like fucking the shit. You know yeah. what I mean? And that's Lemmy. Lemmy is Lemmy. Motorhead. Nobody really owns a Motorhead album, but everybody knows who Lemmy is.
That's hilarious. You know what yeah. I mean?
But who came through Lemmy? Like fucking Metallica yeah. would be there. Like Slayer. Like everybody says these awesome things about Lemmy,
right.
who's in a band that's not yeah, in your collection.
Yeah, tried to rock his facial hair, I mean? For a
and,
few years.
And that's where I looked at my career. I'm like, that's what I love that dude so much. He's just totally himself.
It's it, mate. That's it. Focus. See. So I'm going to be me forever. See.
Yeah, that was a great documentary.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I was. I almost feel like that's why Hatfield tried to rock his.
Oh yeah, for years.
Facial hair, like, for
everything
years.
Everything I did, I took it from him.
Yeah, I got it from Lemmy. Yeah, that was. That's true though, and that it kind of shows too. Sometimes you get older and your not values change, but your wants change. And it's like when I was 20, I was like, I want to be a huge star and live the top of the hill. Now I'm like, oh, I'm just grateful just to have a house and a nice place and a wife and dogs. Dude. Like, you know, you learn to appreciate things. And the friends that I do know who did get the house on the hill and get
super famous.
Just
cool. I mean, we're in a fucking really nice house, you know, and outside Los Angeles, which is really fucking badass.
Yeah.
You know? And
like,
you did this with your comedy and acting and all that other shit.
Yeah, well, then I'd like to say my wife definitely helped.
And the
and
wife
not
helped.
Just by financially, helped by being with me through
when I was... Your wife is like one of the nicest people ever,
she's
dude.
Great.
I feel like you guys have adopted me. Like, I'm your guys' kid sometimes. We're like,
she's
the best. Just have Josh over. I don't think he's eating today. You know, I mean, he's fat, but he probably could swim. He's buoyant.
She's great. And it's in this business when you find somebody who liked you when you weren't shit.
Yes.
That means a lot, you know, and so and then after you became shit, she doesn't buy it. She still breaks balls, and I love that too.
That's the best when people don't forget.
Yeah, it's nice, and so it's funny. I was watching this Mark Wahlberg show because I have time.
Wahlbergus.
I was watching that the other day, and I was thinking that it's like he keeps his buddies around just to break their balls, like his friends from the neighborhood, you know. This guy Nacho, he just pays him. He paid him to eat grass the other day, actual grass.
What?
I'm like, God, jeez. It's like endearing that he keeps his buddy around, but at the same time, he keeps him around just to humiliate him. You know, old school ball breakers.
Yeah,
I guess.
That's just like that's it. You got to have an entourage.
Yeah, and that's who it is. That's the show Entourage was based on.
Yeah,
these goons.
And then he had Ballers, which was the spinoff of Entourage. Well, in a weird way, it was the same setup.
I haven't watched it. I got to watch that. People are like, no, it's really good.
So I honestly went into it thinking I was just going to laugh at it because that's what I love doing. I love watching train wrecks on TV shows and ended up fucking loving that.
Yeah. I did that with Entourage thinking it was like, look at these douchebags. But they knew they were douchebags. They knew what they were. Like they were fully aware of what they were. And so if Ballers is like that, I'll give it a shot. Especially now during COVID. Like
what else
I'm watching Wahlburgers for the little guy.
The COVID, what's your guilty pleasure COVID thing?
What do you mean? Like, what am
shows?
I...
Did you get into?
Oh, okay. I probably like shows that I otherwise wouldn't watch. I've been watching a lot of First 48.
Okay.
But I think the guilty pleasure would have to be the Wahlburgers because
Wahlburgers.
I watch the show Blue Bloods that Donnie Wahlberg's on.
Yeah.
I watch it. It's not because it's good, because it was there. I watched it, and I managed to watch 10 seasons worth of it during COVID. And after you watch something for that long, you start to get used to certain people. And I was like, you know, Donnie's funny. I like him. I've grown fond of Donnie Wahlberg. So let's watch this Jenny McCarthy Donnie show. And I watched that, and I was like, I'm not really that into her, but I still like Donnie because he laughs at himself. He's funny. And then they show the Wahlbergers, so there's 9 brothers. And Donnie's always smiling and laughing, and Mark's just always like, whatever, I can't talk to you right now. I got a call.
Yeah, he's got the ear thing.
I'm like, take your earpiece out. I can't talk right now. I'm always mumbling. And it's just like, so you grow to like the brother and that. So that's been my guilty pleasures, the Wahlburgers. And what's funny, Danny and Mark have suppressed the accent, but the others, hardcore. Come on, guy. This is what you're wearing, guy. You know, it's so, they're so hopelessly
Dorchester. I think what it is, after people know where you're from, then... you can just get rid of it.
Yeah.
You don't hear Rogan with that.
Yeah.
You don't really hear a lot of other people with that.
Right.
It's just like, oh, okay. Well, now that you're not there anymore and we know that you're from there, you have to establish your hardness.
Yeah. You don't have to do your regional accent anymore. But like, you know, so Mark Wahlberg has just talked like this all the time. When it's noticed, like, you know, he wants to be like, oh, hey, guy. But all his friends, his mother, and it's terribly scripted. The show, as most reality shows are that same zany texture.
Do you ever see anybody heartbroken when you tell them that that show is scripted?
It's so funny, man.
It's like
it has to be. You can't just like at the best they can roll A and B footage and string something together. But no, they have to give them objectives. They have to, and so you can tell when one's happening when like because they're all such bad actors except for Mark and Donnie, you know. And so they'll be like, hey, I need you to. It's like, why do you have a camera rolling right now? You know, like. certain things will tell you, how did you get a reverse angle of that? You know, you obviously ran this
you
twice.
You guys did this three times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did because three, you got this side, and yeah, way over there. What the fuck?
Complete coverage with one camera. So,
yeah.
But everything's scripted. It's just, it's better that way. You know, it just is. But I feel guilty getting caught up in it. And then every time you come over, we watch Death Wish.
Death Wish.
Point to,
dude.
Hey, can't not watch Death Wish.
Out of all the fucking, what's addictive is, I never thought I would do a Charles Bronson,
hey,
but you make it addictive. So it's just
fun
like
to do.
We have entire conversations with Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, look, never much of an actor. The opening of Death Wish is, I almost feel like crying, but I'm not going to. My whole family is dead.
I got to go to work tomorrow.
Okay. I'm an architect, but I kill people.
Weird. Yeah.
Weird. I said that last night again.
I said that twice today before I came here. There's a
weird.
All right, guys, watch Death Wish because you'll get it. And then there's another thing too. We got a project that is in the pre-production of works. You, me, and Nako. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really awesome.
It's going to be fun
because it's going to be a mobile traveling thing. And I think we should, if you're around, maybe we'll even post one up at Jamar's show. We'll tailgate at his show.
Yes,
you know, and then that'd they'll call cool. me. That'll be the green room. They'll call me when it's time to go up.
That's it. We'll start that way.
Yeah,
we'll fucking go off and leave everybody thinking, what the fuck are they talking about right now? But the Greasy Boys are in the house. I love the before we split. Usually the three of us do this. The picture pose of like a rejected Beastie Boys picture.
Yeah. This
would have been one that didn't quite make the cut for an album.
Yeah, this was between Paul's Boutique and License to Ill. It wasn't quite.
That's it.
It didn't come out. But the last one we got was okay with Gertie, but I realized Nako was blurry in it. I was like,
somebody. My favorite's still the one in front of Cantor's.
Yeah,
that's
great.
The best.
That one's great. We did good on that one. We did good.
Shit. You got anything coming up? You want to plug anything?
September 6th, I'll be at Jamar's apartment. Look that up.
in Jamar's apartment. Actually, follow Jamar Neighbors on Instagram.
Follow Jamar Neighbors on Instagram. And then, just the thing you and I are going to work on. And I can't say anything coming up until they lift the ban on life.
Yeah, you know? No shit. And that's I got some hot irons in the fire, too, that I can't talk about because I don't want to jinx it, man.
Yeah, that's true.
And then everybody, you ever notice this one where it's just like where you have something cool coming up and it get canceled and people bring it up and throw it in your face? Like, remember when you were going to do that show? Whatever happened to that show?
Yeah,
it's like, wow, is this the carrot you're going to dangle them up in front of my face and make me feel shitty about?
Yeah.
Fuck you, man.
On the air, no less? Wow.
This is what I've noticed too, like before we go, I this is the people I hate. I love everybody right now that are watching this because you guys are awesome, but the people that fucking really get under my skin are the ones that say, like, I don't know, name a sport.
Hockey.
So yeah, okay, so I bet you can't make varsity. Oh, you made varsity? Oh my God, I bet you can't make the regular team. I bet you can't make the minor leagues. Oh, what? You made the minor leagues? You can't make the major leagues. You made the major league? I can't believe you can't. I bet you can't stay in the major leagues. You stayed in the major league? I can't believe you stay in the major league. I bet you can't win a Stanley Cup. Oh, you won a Stanley Cup? Can't believe you won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
What's? I bet you can't repeat. You know, it's like there's no ceiling to these pieces of shit that just want to just push you down. Like no matter how high you succeed, there's always that level higher where they're just going to be like, oh, okay, cool.
That's why that was the only person Michael Jordan would listen to is the people saying that kind of shit.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, really? You think I won't? I love that. You know, that's all I needed.
That's it. And then, one of the best quotes ever, and I used it while I was in the military too, is like, I can accept failure, but I cannot accept not trying.
Right.
And that's the truth, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're not going to try, dude. The fuck?
And don't knock those who are trying, too.
Yeah, no.
You know?
Especially when you see a fat guy like me trying to run. I got to get rid of this fucking chub, man.
I could see you running after the right food trap.
Yeah.
I got him.
Duh, especially that one that's on Wilshire. Never mind. Anyways. All right. Anything you want to plug? Anything else?
No, man.
Freddie Lockhart.
Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I do the Twitter.
Twitters,
thing. Yeah.
Instagrams, all that.
Yeah, all that stuff. Okay. And so,
you'll see me in the B-reel in the background sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fuck yeah. So for all those I followed, thanks for making me a better leader. For all those I've led, thanks for making me a better person. Keep your chin up. Never let the bastards get you down. Fuck the bozos and never forget. Obi loves you. We're out.
Bye.
Bye.
you're screaming.